Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. On today's podcast, Flexo and I talk to J.D. Roth, founder of the personal finance website Get Rich Slowly, about the topic of personal transformation. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. Today we're talking to J.D. Roth, founder of the site Get Rich Slowly, about the topic of personal transformation. J.D., it's good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be back.
Also joining us is Consumerism Commentary founder Flexo. Flexo, as always, it's good to have you on board with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
All right. Now, J.D., personal transformation can be a very broad and deep topic. So why don't you start off by telling us what that term means to you?
Well, I think to me, you can tell by just the term personal transformation. It's something that is going to be different for each person. In my case, personal transformation means examining your identity, looking at who you are, deciding that you want to be somebody else, and then working to become that somebody else. And that somebody else, it might be a different profession. It might be somebody who has different interests. It might be maybe you're overweight and you want to lose weight or you want to become physically fit. To me, there's no one definition for personal transformation, but it's about the process of becoming somebody maybe not different than who you are, but a better version of you.
Is there a scale of change that's required in order for someone to consider a transformation, or are small changes just as good as, you know, kind of reevaluating your life and taking yourself in an entirely new direction?
You know, that's a great question. I think it depends on the person. For many people, they're very content with their lives. They've got a good life, and maybe there are only small adjustments that are necessary. And in this case, I think it could be dangerous to try to make huge transformations to say, you know, I've got a good life. Maybe I need to make a big jump right now and do something completely different. I think that might be a different, dangerous thing to do. As a good example, I'm learning Spanish. One of the transformations I've made over the past year is on June 20th of last year, I started taking Spanish lessons from a Spanish tutor. And I had no experience with Spanish before that. And now, almost a year later, I'm an intermediate Spanish learner. And I was talking with my tutor the other day, and I was like, wow, you know, progress is really slow lately. I see her 3 times a week, 1.5 hours at a time, so that's 4.5 hours a week. And I volunteer in a Spanish language classroom, an immersion program, 5 hours a week. And I have a small group class. I'm basically getting 10 to 15 hours of on-hand Spanish experience every week. And I feel like my progress is just kind of stagnated, primarily because I'm not studying at home like I used to. And I asked my tutor, I said, you know, what's going on here? And she said, well, to be honest, JD, you can keep paying me money. I'm going to take your money if you want to pay me. But if you really want to make progress, you're at the point where you need to move to some place, to a place where you are immersed in the language. You need to move to Spain. You need to move to Peru or some other country where you can speak Spanish all the time. And I said, you know, I really want to do that. That's something I want to do. But at this point, at this moment in my life, I am the happiest I've ever been. I'm having an exciting, fulfilled life, doing all the things I want to do. And so even though I would like to improve my Spanish, take it to the next level, and it's something that's I want to do in the future, that's a huge jump. It's a huge jump. It's a huge transformation. And so I'm not willing to make that change right now because I'm content. I'm happy. So instead, I need to focus on the small changes. So this is kind of a really long answer to your question, but I feel like sometimes small moves are the right moves, sometimes big moves are the right moves, and it depends on your situation, where you are in life.
So I'm going to make this a little longer then, JD. So why Spanish? Why would you feel the need to learn Spanish?
You know, that's a great question. There are a couple of things that went into it. It's not really a need that I felt. The first factor was I attended last year's World Domination Summit, which is a conference that my friend Chris Guillebeau puts on here in Portland. And the second annual one is coming up just a little bit. And while at that conference, I met a man named Benny Lewis. And Benny has a blog called Fluent in 3 Months. And his shtick, because, you know, all of us bloggers have shticks, right? his shtick is that, you know, if you devote yourself, you can become maybe not fluent, but you can pick up a language very easily in 3 months if you spend the time and the energy to do it. And so I talked to him and I was really motivated by this. And I thought, oh, you know, Spanish might be a good language to learn. At the same time, my then wife, Chris, and I planned to take a trip to Argentina and Chile, to Patagonia. And I thought, oh, you know, I could learn Spanish for this trip. So I put I responded to an ad on Craigslist. I met this tutor. And then the third factor that made me want to learn Spanish was I just clicked with her right away. She was amazing. And because of how effective she was as an instructor, I was motivated to continue learning the language.
You mentioned that you were happy where you are now, content, and thus not really motivated to take the next major step
right.
in this particular transformation, which would be completely immersing yourself in the language. Let's talk a little bit about contentment. A lot of people would probably be interested in transforming their lives. Perhaps they're a little discontent with their lives and would be happy to make a change. But is there something to be said for recognizing what you have and learning to be content?
Yes, absolutely. And this is a fine line to walk, and it's a difficult subject. There is absolutely something to be said for being grateful for what you have, for accepting what you have, for being content with what you have. In fact, this is one of the fundamental principles that I've written about at Get Rich Slowly, and I think you've probably written about it, consumers, in commentary. There's a principle that we call lifestyle inflation, and that is, once you get to a certain level of, say, economic comfort, once you have a certain number of things, it's very difficult for us to remain satisfied with what we have, because we look out and we say, oh, there's a new iPad coming out, or my neighbor's just got a hot tub, or my car is broken down and I'd really like a new car. And so we're always feeling this push to have newer things and to have more than what we have. And because we're not content with what we have, because we're not satisfied, it makes us spend more money. And this is lifestyle inflation. And so I've written a lot about the fact that if you can learn to be content with what you have, you can save a lot of money and you'll be happier. This is one of the principles in research into happiness, is if you're able to accept who you are and what you have, you'll be a lot happier than those who are always looking outside themselves and thinking that there's more that they need to be happy.
How do you reconcile the idea and the importance of contentment with the drive to make very low-level redirections or transformations with someone's life?
Ah, that's a great question. I'm writing this down. Okay. So I don't know, because there's a difference between contentment and complacency. I mean, contentment and complacency is one thing, and it's something else to want to improve yourself and want to have more and to be better, and that's all good, right? But there's also the problem that people get into where they're willing to allow themselves to be stuck in a situation that's comfortable because they know it and yet is detrimental to their well-being, whether it's physical well-being or psychological well-being or financial well-being. They're complacent, and so they stick with a bad thing because it's the devil they know instead of the devil they don't. And I think the classic example is a person who's stuck in an abusive relationship, and they stay in that abusive relationship because it's something they know, and because they feel they're not worth having something better, or it's too scary to change, and so they stick in the abusive relationship. And so how do you reconcile the two? I'm not sure. And for me, I know that I had to reach a point in my life with my finances, with my fitness, and even with my marriage. I mean, because I've made a big transformation with my marriage. I recently got a divorce. I had to admit to myself that the complacency that I was feeling wasn't because I had what I needed and everything was good. I was feeling complacent just because I was scared to change. I was afraid to change. I was afraid to say, yes, I can have something better. And so I accepted basically poor choices that I'd made in the past. I just lived with them instead of trying to make myself better.
Now, were you overweight at the time, JD? You're talking about health issues. I mean, is this something that, like, you know, after you got divorced, because there's no better diet than the divorce diet, which is, you know, after somebody gets divorced, they immediately go and do a self-assessment of their weight and their health and go, you know what? I'm not going to find anybody new unless I lose some pounds.
Actually, I've actually gained weight since mine, but not much. I haven't gained a lot. First of all, I should say that over the past 7 or 8 years, when I look at the JD of 7 or 8 years ago, I can't say he's completely different than the JD of today, because many of the core elements are still there. But it's as if I've gone from being afraid to express who I am, afraid to be who I want to be, to all of a sudden I'm not. And I'm being honest with people about who I am and what I need and what I want. And it's made it so that my life is completely different. That's for certain. So 7 or 8 years ago, yes, I was overweight. At the beginning of 2010, January 1st, 2010, so that's 2.5 years ago, I weighed 213 pounds. And so over the next 18 months, I lost 50 pounds. And so over the past year, I've gained about 10 of that back, much of which is muscle because I've been at the gym and I've continued to build. But some of it I do need to lose. I'm actually right now during the month of June, I'm actually going through a process where I'm trying to lose some of that weight. I'm dieting.
Right. I was going to say, if you're down to like 163, I mean, depending on your height, that's pretty light.
Yeah. I mean, according to my scale, I'm at 173 today. Today, my weight is 173.
Well, that's great.
My BMI is 25.6. And if you're over 25, you're obese in theory. You're overweight.
I live
I'm like,
that.
No. Everyone that I tell that I'm trying to lose weight, they're like, including my massage therapist, and who knows my body better than my massage therapist? She's like, JD, you don't need to lose weight. And so the BMI lies.
Yeah, and you know, you're bringing up contentment as a decent point here. I mean, I was going to touch on, you know, what would really be the trigger point for a lot of this? Because I'm guessing that a person would have to be at a pretty low point in their life to consider making such major self-improvements.
That's a good question, too. I guess it's easy to identify individual trigger points for different things because I knew that I was unhappy. Back in 2003, 2004, I wrote a blog post for my personal blog called The Man I Want to Be. I sat down one day, I got home from work, and I sat down and I said, you know, this is what I'm doing today. I'm not being the person I want to be. I'm living this life, and it's not the life I want. And I described the life that I thought I wanted. And again, one of the principles of happiness research, one of the things they've discovered is you can't actually predict what you really want. You might say that, for example, you want a new car or something will make you happy, but eventually once you get it, you'll go, oh, that's not really what I wanted. So the predictions I made back then weren't accurate about what I did want. But the point is, I sat down and I said, you know, I'm not happy. I need to change. I need to figure something out. And this was in the middle of 2004. I think it was the fall of 2004. And that's right around when I decided to change my personal finance life. That's when my personal financial transformation began. And that was the first thing I took care of was the financial stuff because that was the biggest burden. It was dragging me down. So the impetus there was to turn things around financially. First of all, I was deep in debt. We had just bought a house. And I thought on paper I could afford it, but in reality, it was like an anchor pulling me to the bottom of the ocean. And so that was the impetus for changing the personal finance life. For the fitness life, physical fitness, at the end of 2009, I was just feeling like crap. And I was getting to the age where I was over 40, and none of the men in my family were living past 50. They were all dying of health-related issues primarily because they were overweight. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to be fit. And so that was the impetus there. And then each change that I've made has had a different impetus.
Do you think that by making the financial transformation first, that it gave you more of an opportunity to have the leeway to make changes in other aspects of your life?
Yes. How's that for a short answer? No, absolutely. Like, so it made it, by having financial stability, by having my feet under me financially, it gave me the freedom to make some choices that I otherwise would not have been able to make. Now, I'll give it a very good example. This isn't completely public yet. I'm not sure when this will be broadcast, but it's going to be coming out soon anyway. I've been writing at Get Rich Slowly for six and a half years. I've been running this website. And I've reached the point where I feel like I've said almost everything I can possibly say about personal finance. I love the community at Get Rich Slowly. I love interacting with people. And I even love writing about personal finance, but I have nothing new to say. And so at the beginning of July, I'm going to stop. I'm done writing at Get Rich Slowly, and I'm done writing anywhere about personal finance. I'm basically retiring as a personal finance writer. And of course, I'll still write here and there because I won't be able to completely shut myself up. But I'm ready to move on. I wouldn't be able to make this decision. I wouldn't be able to say, okay, I'm giving up this job if I were not secure financially. But because I'm secure financially, I can say, yes, I'm willing to take a risk and give up an income for a while and try to find some other sort of work because I have the financial cushion to fall back on.
So you're quitting your side project and you're going back to a day job then?
Well, I'm actually going to take 2 or 3 months off first and do nothing. And then I'm not going to go back to a day job just yet, although I may. I'm not ruling that out. I think I'm going to try to write about other things. There are other things I would love to write about on the web.
Well, first of all, congratulations on making this decision. That's a very difficult decision to make. And
yes.
People certainly stay in situations that are not optimal for longer than they need to.
Fluxo, you know nothing about that, I'm sure.
No. And that brings me to another thing that I think is important, and that's the motivation. Considering a lot of people do stop to consider their lives occasionally and decide that, perhaps there's better options for them somewhere, what is it that prevents people from creating the inner motivation that they need in order to make those changes?
You know, I think it's because for so long we've been conditioned to wait for somebody to give us permission to make changes. When we're children, we need our parents to give us permission. When we're in school, we need teachers to give us permission. And even when we're in a relationship, we often wait for our partners to give us permission to make major changes. And so it's very difficult sometimes for us to give ourselves permission to make the changes we want to make. And I know that was certainly true in my case. So I think part of the problem is, okay, first of all, we're scared to take risks, right? We're really afraid. But second, we want somebody to give us permission to tell us it's okay to quit your job, or it's okay to move to another country, or it's okay to have children or to not have children. We're wanting people to give us permission to do these things when in reality, we don't need permission. We're the only ones who can give ourselves permission to do the things that we want to do. And I think that's a very important principle. And once I grasped it, it was kind of revolutionary. It allowed me to begin making decisions that I was putting off because I was basically waiting for somebody else to tell me, no, yeah, okay, JD, go ahead.
I've always been a little down on motivational speakers and gurus, but is that a role that they fill then?
I think it depends on, I've always been down on gurus and motivational speakers too, but I don't know that they fill the role of giving permission, but I think they do help with the inspiration. For me, motivational speakers don't do much for me, which is hilarious because in a month I'm going to be giving a motivational talk in front of 1,000 people. So look at that irony. But,
there's your opening statement. None of this will work.
Well, yeah, I've got something about that in the talk. For me, though, books, I've always been really influenced by books, especially when it came to my personal finance transformation, my fitness transformation. I don't know why books are better for me. Maybe because I can follow the logic. It's there in black and white. I can underline. I can go back and digest. And so for me, reading books from motivational gurus, they help me identify certain things that I need to do to make my life better. One of the books, I'm trying to figure out whether my cord will reach over to this bookshelf. One of the books that I read last year about this time that was tremendously influential for me was How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World by Harry Brown. Now, Harry Brown was best known as a libertarian candidate for president. He ran several times. And don't hold that against him, is what I would say. The How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, which I think just recently came back into print, is all about not asking people for permission, but saying, No, this is who I am and what I need to do in order to be happy, and then allowing yourself to make those decisions. And when I read this last June, it was like a light bulb went on my head. I was like, wow, okay, I can do some of these things. I can make some of these changes. And he says, when you make changes, when you really transform your life, some people aren't going to like it. They're not going to like who you are because they're used to you being this person who's trying to please other people or who's acting in a specific role. And when all of a sudden you change, some of the people who are your friends or maybe even your spouse or your partner, they're not going to like who you are. And he says, you know what? That's okay because there will be other people who do like you for who you are. And when I read that, I was like, really? But over the past year, I've put these principles into practice and it's true. Sure, there's some of my former friends don't like me. They don't want to be with me. But I've also made other friends. And the good thing is the new friends are based on who I really am instead of the person I was trying to be in the past. And so the friendships are more authentic, I feel like, that they're more genuine, and I don't have to pretend to be somebody else. I'm just being me, and it's awesome. And then the second book that I've been listening to in Spanish, so I don't actually know how it is in English, is it's a book called The Power of Now, which almost everyone has read, by Eckhart Tolle or Tolle. I don't know how to pronounce the name. And the book is all about, instead of instead of dwelling on the past and dwelling on your past mistakes, and instead of worrying about the future and what might come in the future, instead just focus on the present moment. Focus on today. Focus on now. And for me, this was huge because I used to dwell on the past a lot and moan and groan about my past mistakes, or I would worry about the future and say, oh my gosh, look at all these things. How am I ever going to provide for the future? But instead, what I'm trying to do is just live in the moment and be in the moment and be with the person I'm with, for example, when I go out to eat. One of the things I used to do is I'd go out to eat and I'd have my iPhone with me. I might even have my iPad and I'd be totally distracted. I don't do that anymore. I completely shut aside the distractions and I'm just with whomever I'm with at that moment. And this isn't a principle I learned from The Power of Now, but The Power of Now is just reinforcing this decision that I made last fall.
Wouldn't that be funny if this book was like really a cookbook, but you know, you said you really weren't that fluent in Spanish just yet. You didn't get that?
You know, at times I worry about that. My tutor will tell me something. This happened just last night. She told me something. I'm like, uh-huh. And she just shakes her head and she's like, JD, you didn't understand a word I said. You need to respond to something.
Now,
like, oh, well.
No, but what I want to get back on this, you're touching on multiple points, and you kind of alluded to a risk before being a major influence on whether or not people can actually make this step to doing a personal transformation. And I can fully understand that because all this ties in, your contentment, your fear of taking risks. And, you know, anytime you're talking about doing something like this, you're trading in your complacent attitude. You're trading in a safe place in your life in order to something that may or may not work out.
Exactly.
You made a good point about living in the moment. I think, however, that the reason you are able to do this at this point, and probably the reason a lot of people are able to have the luxury of focusing on the moment, is because they have already focused on the future and did what they had to do in order to make sure that they are clear sailing ahead.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Flex. So for me, I did focus on the future for a while. And you can't just live simply in the moment, or you end up with this ant and the grasshopper type thing, right? Where, let's see, the grasshopper is the one fiddling away the whole time and not providing for the winter, and the ant's working hard to provide for the winter. So you've got to find a balance. You've got to find a balance, and you've got to make sure you do take care of the future. So you've got to save in your 401k, your Roth IRA. You've got to have an emergency fund. You've got to do some of this stuff. There's no question. But at the same time, you shouldn't be so obsessed with it that you're sacrificing your life today for a future that may not come. Mm-hmm. You've got to find a balance.
Now, you also alluded to before, you were setting it, you know, and we're kind of talking about this now, setting up IRAs and whatnot. But you were saying that even before that, before you started making this transformation, you had to get your house in order financially. So mm-hmm. What kind of steps can people take to start this transformation and to at least get themselves on decent footing financially?
Well, I think the number one thing to do, of course, is to make sure that you are spending less than you earn. People don't like that advice. They think it's very facile. It's very easy. It's very trite. But the fact of the matter is, this is the fundamental principle of personal finance, is that in order to get ahead of financially, you have to spend less than you earn. If you're not spending less than you earn, you're essentially digging deeper into debt. So first step, spend less than you earn. If you have debt, use some of that excess money that you're earning every month, because now you're spending less than you earn. Use some of that to pay down your debt, and in fact, prioritize paying down your debt. Do everything you can to pay off your debt. As you do that, or maybe after you do that, or even before you do that, build an emergency fund. I think it's very important for people to have $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 stashed away. And that level of the emergency fund is going to vary depending on where you are in your journey. If you're just starting out, it might be just $100 or $500. But after you get out of debt, you can throw all the money that you're using to pay off debt, you can throw that into your emergency fund to build that up. So I think doing these things, and then once you've got your emergency fund established, making sure you're saving for retirement regularly, systematically, doing those things are the things you need to do to build a secure financial future so that you're able to be present in the moment and not worry about what's going on today.
And once you've done all of that, I consider that the easy part of transformation. After that, you have the opportunity to evaluate yourself, self-reflect, and really determine what it is that you want to change. I consider that to be the most difficult part of this of a journey someone would take.
Deciding what you want to change.
Yeah, and do you have any suggestions for how to effectively self-reflect?
This is a great question. I like to say that you have to know yourself. But that's tough. I mean, what does it mean to know yourself?
Right.
It all comes about from being honest with yourself about what you like and what you do, and not in an ideal way or an idealized way, but in reality. For myself, I can say that I used to say this all the time. I wanted a house with acreage. I wanted farm. I wanted to have a shop. But the reality of the situation was when I lived at a house with 3 fifths of an acre and a shop, I didn't take care of the yard. I hated it. I hated the yard work. I didn't enjoy it. And so now I live in this little 700 square foot apartment. And you know what? It fits my lifestyle perfectly. I love it. And so this small transformation from living in an 1800 square foot house with 3 fifths of an acre to living in a 700 square foot apartment, this comes about because I'm honest with myself about how I act, how I behave, what I do. Another example would be if I had a television, I would almost never watch it because I just don't watch television. And television is fine for somebody else, but I don't use it. I know other people who rarely use a computer or who don't use a cell phone. And so for them to have a cell phone, it's kind of silly because they don't ever use it. Or for them to have a computer, they could use somebody else's or go to the library. So I guess deciding what kind of changes to make and how to make them comes from an honest evaluation of who you are, the choices you make, and where you want to go or where you think you want to go.
Speaking of where you want to go, you talked a little bit about what your future plans are now that you are moving away from Get Rich Slowly and writing about personal finance. Could you expand on your plans a little bit just so we can know what we can look forward to from you?
Sure. I'm reminded, I like musical theater. I think maybe Flexo, you do too. I'm not sure. But, you know, there's a show, Into the Woods, and I'm pretty sure that this is where this line is from. It's something about, I know what my decision is, which is not to decide, or it's something like that. And so really, when I'm done with Get Rich Slowly at the beginning of July, I'm going to spend 3 months doing nothing. Well, I say I'm going to be doing nothing, but in reality, the first 2 months, I'll be getting back into my old blogs, trying to write at them again and trying to find a rhythm there because I really want to write about travel. I've got a site called Awesome People that I feel passionate that this is going to be, I want it to be my life work. 10 years from now, I want to be known for Awesome People, not for Get Rich Slowly. And it's essentially a site about people who do amazing things, whether they're emotionally, physically, financially, whatever, just people who do amazing things. Because I think there's too much attention paid to the negativity in this world, to the bad things. You've got things like the fail blog. The news is filled with terrible stories. I want to focus on the positive things people do, the amazing things people do. And so I really think there's potential for this site. So I'm going to spend a couple of months working on these sites, trying to get them figuring out where I want to go with them. And then I'm going to go to Turkey for a month and just, you know, ignore the world. And then when I come back in the fall, I'll sit down and actually try to make a plan. Because right now, I don't have a plan. My plan is to be in the moment, I guess. And okay, I'm going to follow up real quick here because I just realized that I mentioned earlier my Spanish and the fact that I've learned Spanish over the past year. I've discovered that I'm really passionate about certain issues related to learning Spanish, including immigration issues and education. And so I've been volunteering in a school. I've been volunteering with an organization that works with immigrant women. And I would like to do more of this. And I think that maybe there's a possibility I could use my Spanish language skills, especially if they get better, in some sort of capacity that earn me money and help somebody. So who knows what that'll be.
All right. So in other words, you're going to take those Spanish skills and go off to Turkey then.
Exactly. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I didn't choose Turkey. I'm going with my cousin, and he and I will have a great time. But I went to Peru last fall, and I went to Patagonia this last February. So I'll be back to Spanish-speaking countries.
All right, J.D., I'm going to call it a wrap on that note. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was J.D. Roth, founder of the website Get Rich Slowly. You can visit J.D.'s website at getrichslowly.org. And as you also heard, he has another endeavor going on with Awesome People. You can check out that website at awesomepeople.com. This is Tom Dubek along with Flexo, and thanks for joining us in the Consumerism Commentary Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubek, Brian J. Bush, and Luke Landis. The music is composed and performed by Mindcube. The podcast was founded by Luke Landis.